Let's talk to Elise Glink. Elise is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. And she's talking today about, among other things, Airbnbs. Elise, welcome back. How have you been?
Things are good. How about you?
Really good with this weather. How can you not be?
Yeah, right.
A lot of anxiety in the air, too, though. I think a lot of us got up today going, all right, one more week of this, and then we'll know. What do you know about Airbnbs and VRBs right now?
So everybody knows that Airbnb has become the place, along with VRBO, Vacation Rental by Owner, for the place that if you're looking to go on vacation somewhere and you don't think you want to stay in a hotel, this has become a very viable option globally. And, you know, there have been some positive and negatives. You know, different communities have banned short-term rentals, which is what these companies offer, and other areas of the country have been more welcoming. We've had talked about problems over the years where there have been nonstop partying all night and others where the prices have just come climbing, including the cleanup fees of $500 a piece now, that can really push, you know, your expenses over the edge. And so one of the things that has come up in the world of housing that you know that I frequent is, are Airbnb and VRBO the cause or part of the cause of why we are over 7 million homes short in this country for people to live in? A lot of people over the last 5 years have been buying homes to rent as opposed to live in.
How have I not thought of that? As much as we've talked about that, we really haven't touched on that point much. But there's a house a block away from mine that sits empty and would be a nice house to buy in my neighborhood. It's a rental. In fact, there's another one that just popped up in my neighborhood, now that I think about it, close to me. And that sits empty, waiting for somebody to occupy it sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers are really hard to fathom. The short-term rental market generates $64 billion a year in revenue. That was last year's number. It's up from $39 billion in 2019, right? So that's almost double in just 4 years. And the firm that does these numbers, AirDNA, it's a data and analytics firm, they estimate there's over 2.5 million vacation rental listings with 785,000 hosts. And they actually think they need more of these homes. And so you might say to yourself, well, 2.5 million isn't quite where 7 million is, right? There's a difference in it. But boy, we could sure use 2.5 million new homes for sale, as opposed to just rentals. And one of the things you and I have talked about, just to kind of give some scope, this isn't really only low-end or middle or upper-end properties. I mean, there's vacancies, and by that I mean people who own property and don't live in it very often. Like maybe in New York, you see very high-end homes that are worth millions and millions of dollars. People might spend 1 week a year there, and the rest of the time, the properties are vacant. So there's lots of this going on all over the place.
Wonder if that bubble's going to burst at some point. I wonder if enough houses get on the market that then you'll have too many houses because you'll have these hundreds of thousands of units sitting empty all the time, and other people will eventually found this housing crunch will end. I wonder if that's going to take the air out of the VRBO market.
You know, I don't know. It would take a lot to get us there, given that, you know, every year we have an increasing population and more people are financially ready to move out. And the numbers of homes that were short are growing, because a couple of years ago I was telling you we were 5 million homes short. Now we're 7.2 million homes short.
Talking to Elise Glink, Think Glink Media, about Halloween stuff. What have you got there, Elise?
All right. So 11 and a half, a little more than that, $11.5 billion is going to be spent on Halloween this year. Now, I don't know about you, but I dragged all of my old decor out and I hung up my pumpkins and all this sort of thing. And then I went out and bought a bag of candy. So I've contributed my $20 to the Halloween spending, but over almost $12 billion in spending, $3.8 billion on Halloween costumes. And get this, PetSmart did a study and 76% of adult American pet owners say they're going to put their pets in costume. And they are going to spend $700 million on Halloween costumes for their pets this year.
I've heard some of these numbers, and that's just staggering to me. Go back to the first one. How much money do we spend on Halloween?
Yeah, $11.6 billion, and that includes everything, costumes, candy, decorations, party favors, anything related to Halloween. This was never a huge, I mean, we all, you know, dressed up in costumes. Actually, my mother used to make our costumes. One year I went as Snoopy in his doghouse, and that was my costume.
Nice.
Right? And there's a picture somewhere. I should probably send it to you to post it online. But it has become really big business. So starting somewhere around August, Costco goes completely orange because they have orange lights, huge pumpkins that blow up, and other kinds of really scary 20-foot tall decorations that you can get. It's become big business.
There's a couple of houses about a mile or two from where we live, and they have those, you know, those monstrously large skeletons.
Oh, yeah.
So they have about five of those. But then they must have maybe 50 other skeletons, a skeleton riding a skeleton horse, a skeleton walking a skeleton dog. But the creepiest thing is it's kind of a big brick house. And they have a skeleton mariachi band playing on the roof. But the coolest part of it is on the side of the house, and it's maybe two or three stories of just brick, you know, with some windows. They have maybe eight skeletons scaling the side of the building.
And just
you
in
go
case
by,
you didn't
you go,
get
holy
it
crap, it's the end. They're coming to get you. It's wild. And I don't know what that costs, but that's got to be a billion right there.
Yeah, that's a lot, I have to say. It's interesting because when you look at the total amount that is projected to be spent on Halloween costumes and candy, that alone is $7.3 billion. So out of the 11.6, you know, most of that is candy and costumes, and don't forget our pets and our pet owners. Maybe they buy them special treats also. But it's kind of interesting to see, you know, how that goes. Now, the only thing that has really gone down in price this year over last year, the average retail price of a pumpkin down 18% from last year, $4.93.
Thanksgiving's next. What are you hearing about that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, everybody's really focused on the cost of, you know, doing the turkey. Turkeys are going up in price. All of the fixings are going to go up. So Target released its cheapest ever Thanksgiving meal deal. So Target's done this. Walmart is doing this. Aldi is doing it. Sam's Club. I'm sure Costco's going to join into the fray. In fact, we just bought our stuffing at Costco. It was in, you know, whatever. But Target lowered the price.
You don't sound very enthusiastic about your stuffing there.
Well, it hasn't been gussied up yet.
There you go.
Actually, I have too much stuffing. I bought three packages because it came in the box, and I'm probably only going to use 1.5 this year, so I'll have to pack the rest away. But what Target did is they looked at their 8,000 products that could possibly be related to Thanksgiving, and they've discounted it as much as possible. And so they've created a Thanksgiving meal for four for $20, which is a $5 decrease from 2023. You get a frozen turkey up to 10 pounds, potatoes, canned green beans, cream of mushroom soup, box of stuffing mix, and jarred gravy. And they basically did it on their name brand and Target's brand is called Good and Gather label. And so all of the big retailers that I mentioned, Aldi, Walmart, Sam's Club, you know, they all are trying to come up with different ways to feed people for less this year, just because this is such a focus for everybody.
Food costs, for sure. So $20 is less than last year, and that's for four, so about $5 a person, they're saying.
Yeah, and Sam's Club is their members' mark. That's their house brand. They're going to give you enough for 10 people for under $100. And that one's delivered already cooked.
Wow. Wow.
So you don't even have to pay for the gas, but a little bit more than the other one.
We'll continue to follow this and more. Well, Elise will, and she reports back to us on Mondays. Nice to talk to you, Elise.
You too, John. Thank you.
Elise Glink is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Check her stuff out at thinkglink.com. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. Most Mondays at this time, Jim Dahlke joins us. Today's no exception, the Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Let's talk about Google opening a store, a brick-and-mortar store in Oak Brook Center. When and what will be in the store?
Yeah, so this is going to be Google's only their fifth retail location and their first ever in the Midwest. So this is a store that's going to open on November 1st, location at the Oak Brook Center Mall. Chicago really is getting kind of its first Google store, really the whole region getting its first Google store. And what they're going to do here, shoppers are going to be able to browse from a range of different Google products. Think it's Pixel phones, it's watches, tablets, the Nest cameras, Fitbit trackers. And you get a chance to kind of interact with these products in real time and in real life, and Google's going to be able to show off not just the products, but also the AI experiences that can happen within these two and kind of help with troubleshooting and repair. So think of it kind of like an Apple store, you know, a Genius Bar and retail operation, but, you know, a physical space here for Google. So, you know, Google has not really, done a ton of retail stores, right? But interesting to see that it's latest is going to be opening here in the Chicago area.
Right, but Apple manufactures products. What does Google make?
Yeah, so Google's got their Google Pixel phones. So the Pixel phone is, you know, really a product that the company is leaning into. And, of course, they got their Nest cameras and, a range of different kind of, you know, watches and Fitbit trackers. And so Google over the years has invested in hardware. And, I think we can continue to expect them to grow that portfolio as well. So as they look to continue to double down on physical products, they're going to do that in a physical retail environment as well.
So the same, I think of Google as infinity, but it's not, this isn't a Sam's Club store. It's a Google store for Google electronics, basically, right?
That's exactly right. And you can imagine, too, as artificial intelligence gets incorporated, you know, more deeply into all these products, not just Google, but everywhere, it's going to be a learning curve for consumers, right? How am I using this product now? How does artificial intelligence kind of power these devices? And so Google is thinking, hey, you know, people are going to have questions and want some hands-on experience, and maybe retail stores is one way for folks not just to, you know, purchase products, but actually see them practiced in the wild.
It's a nice mall, too. That's probably a good location. There's a lot of money out that way. There's high-end stores. They've invested a lot of money upgrading Oak Brook Center, so that's probably a good destination for them, isn't it?
I would think so. They're going to occupy a former American Eagle location there, take up about 3,500 square feet.
Okay. Talk to me. Oh, I think this is crazy, too. Speaking of technology, the drone delivery that Northwest Medicine is going to try. Talk about that.
Yeah, Northwestern Medicine is working with a Chicago startup to test ways to do drone delivery of medical devices. They're working initially out here in Delnor Hospital in West Suburban Geneva. They are working with a startup called Valkyrie, which is a drone startup here in Chicago, kind of working to revolutionize last-mile delivery with drones. And basically, what's going to happen is Delnor Hospital has been working with this drone startup to transport medical supplies to and from its main hospital to its cancer center just across the street. And so, you know, basically right now, nurses can, it eats up a large part of the day kind of bringing lab supplies from the main hospital all over to the cancer center. Round trip of that can take up to 30 minutes and kind of really take the nurse away from, you know, more time with the patient, right? And what these drone deliveries say they can do is make, you know, that delivery more efficient, allow, you know, the nurse and the hospital staff to spend more time, you know, doing more important things and allow the drone to kind of take on these deliveries. They say so far they've done about 50 deliveries thus far with 100% success rate. So if this pilot program continues to be successful, you can imagine Northwestern Medicine and incorporating some more similar drone deliveries, not just at Delnor Hospital in Geneva, but elsewhere.
They're not going to drone deliver organs or tissue or blood, are they?
I would be surprised if we see that yet. My guess is this is, a pretty standard medical supply stuff, not so sensitive in nature. But, you know, what you want to see is not just 50 deliveries at 100%, but, 50,000 deliveries at 100%, I think, before you're going to, you know, send potentially an organ via drone. But
I know that
my
sounds,
guess is that, you know.
That sounds silly, but, I mean, if it's not those, you would think, okay, whatever's in that little box that they need on the third floor of the other campus building, Is it so urgent that you have to have drones deliver it? But the urgency with human tissues might be. I mean, we deliver these things with helicopters now. I wonder if drones would be a standard means someday.
I think that's certainly possible. And, you know, one use case here, you know, it's one thing in a kind of, you know, densely populated suburban town. It's another thing in a more rural area where, you know, yeah, things are much more spread apart and traveling to and from is certainly a different conversation, right? So I think as we certainly look at hospital systems out even further west, you know, into, you know, beyond Chicagoland, you know, these are areas that could certainly benefit from drone delivery and kind of making those deliveries more efficient of their medical supplies.
One last thing about all that. Do you know, Jim, if when these things happen, is it a human watching a screen with a toggle switch or just somebody just punching coordinates and there's no human interaction once you hit send on a drone?
It's a great question. I'm not exactly sure if this is an autonomous situation or if there is somebody kind of piloting the drone. I wouldn't be surprised if there's certainly at this point some human, you know, oversight into kind of making sure that this thing is, you know, traveling the path that it should be traveling. But you can certainly imagine a future, right, where these drones are completely automated. They know exactly what their route path is, and they are taking off and landing and running, you know, automatically.
What's Hydrosome Labs?
Yeah, you know, John, Chicago is known historically for its tech scene as a B2B software hub. We've had lots of successful B2B software companies in town. So it's why I always like to talk about companies that are a little outside of that range. And this is Hydrosome Labs, a company working on bubble technology. Yes, it might sound a little silly, but you know what they've said is they've found a way to use ultra fine bubbles in water to improve products across a range of different applications. You know, what they've found is that their bubble technology can be used to improve nutrient uptake in skincare. It can be used in beverages and improving hydration, key uptake of different ingredients, and can even work to help plants grow faster and healthier with less fertilizer and improving fermentation. What they've been able to do commercially, they're working right now with a skincare company. Actually, Cindy Crawford's Meaningful Beauty is using the startup's bubble technology in some of its skincare to improve its products. So really kind of interesting approach here from a company called Hydrosome Labs, and just raised about $3.7 million in new funding as it comes out of stealth mode.
Okay, I got a lot of questions and you don't have any of the answers, but I'm just going to ask one. So in other words, the water in these products has bubbles in there that are small.
That's right. So basically they have created better bubbles. You know, this sort of, you know, their patented process creates invisible bubble structures in water, which they're calling ultra fine bubbles. And, you know, they differ from conventional bubbles. And their difference is really this capacity to improve the delivery of ingredients. So the delivery of nutrients, vitamins, gases, water, right to the cells and the tissues. So those nutrients that are in that skincare are able to, you know, stay in your skin better and longer and stronger based on the bubble technology that Hydrosome Labs is working on.
Jim Dahlke is the Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. Wow. Okay, Jim, interesting stuff. Thank you for your help.
Thanks, John.
Let's get you more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. North Chicago-based AbbVie is buying Aliada Therapeutics for $1.4 billion. It'll give AbbVie access to Aliada's Alzheimer's disease drug candidate. AbbVie has been making moves to bolster its neuroscience focus. It bought neuroscience and cancer drug developers earlier this year. Aliada's Alzheimer's drug is in the early stage development and could be a major new therapy. It utilizes protein in the blood that carries iron to transport an antibody that degrades and eliminates brain plaque connected to Alzheimer's. A New York Attorney General investigation into Capital One's proposed acquisition of Discover Financial Services could slow the deal. Capital One has offered $35 billion for the Riverwoods-based Discover. The deal was supposed to close later this year or early next year. Cranes reports there's been a legal back and forth over Capital One's records related to the deal. There's been antitrust concerns over the deal, and New York's Attorney General has said the acquisition would have a significant impact on consumers. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, now the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And for a lot of us, food safety is something we don't think much about. Until there's a crisis like the one at McDonald's. Fortunately, there are people like Mitzi Baum. She thinks about food safety all the time. Mitzi is CEO of Stop Foodborne Illness.
We're a national public health nonprofit.
Headquartered right here in Chicago, right?
We are. And we work with individuals and families that have been adversely impacted due to food poisoning. We also focus on food safety policy at the federal level, and we work with industry growing a positive internal food safety culture.
The nonprofit was started by parents of victims of a much worse event than the McDonald's onions. What that was, and I bet you remember. After, I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, as bad as the McDonald's E. coli issue is, one person is dead. 75 and counting are ill. The Jack in the Box debacle in 1993 was much worse. The chain was promoting its new monster burger as so good it's scary. Demand was overwhelming. The meat was often undercooked to keep up. E. coli killed 4 children and left 178 others with permanent injuries, including kidney and brain damage. Most were children under 10.
Stop Foodborne Illness was founded by the parents of children who lost their lives due to that E. coli outbreak in 1993. They demanded answers and asked how E. coli could be present. How does that happen and why is that allowed?
In fact, it was allowed. The federal standard required hamburgers to be cooked at 140 degrees, not the 155 degrees necessary to completely kill E. coli. After Jack in the Box, the FDA raised the federal standard to 155 degrees. But as we learned in the years since Jack in the Box, it isn't just meat that can make us sick. More about that tomorrow. In the meantime, here's the website.
StopFoodborneIllness.org.
On today's food calendar, it's National Chocolate Day. That's got to be pretty safe, right? I hope. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Joe Chura joins us now, president and founder of Go Brewing. And guess what they're brewing? Joe, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What are you brewing? What kind of brew do you make?
Well, we make non-alcoholic beer exclusively, and we just launched a pumpkin beer that is pretty incredible to beer club members only. But we have 5 different styles in all over Chicagoland, from a double IPA to a Pilsner to a sour gluten-free beer and a tropical hazy IPA.
This isn't the first time we've talked. How's business been going?
It's been going incredible. We've expanded since we talked to 20 states where we have distribution. So we are in bars, restaurants, and chains across now the East Coast. So we're in a big chain called Wegmans. And then in Chicagoland, remain pretty strong in Jewel, Mariano's, Whole Foods, Binny's, and a lot of great on-premise restaurants and bars.
Do you have your own brick-and-mortar bar or presence somewhere?
We have a tap room in Naperville, right, if anyone's familiar with Naperville, right behind Ogden Avenue, where the car dealerships are. That is where we have one of the only tap rooms actually in the U.S. that has about 14 non-alcoholic beers on tap, and then we have guest taps, so we serve alcohol beer, but we don't make it ourselves. And we have wine and programming every week between live bands, music, other music events, storytelling, health and wellness, and more.
What's the split in your tap room from alcohol beer you sell to non-alcoholic beer?
It's about 90-10, 90 non-alcohol and 10% alcoholic beer.
Hmm. What do you make of that? What's going on here?
Well, it's when someone looks up Go Brewing, it's obvious, it's a destination for non-alcoholic beer, and we have people literally come from all over the country to check out our tap room because it's so unique and special. But really, I think it is a change in times. You know, people are realizing that regularly drinking alcohol isn't necessarily great for you, and they're looking for alternatives, but they still want to hang out socially. And that's not to say that you know, people don't want anything. In fact, 80% of our audience still drinks in moderation, but 20% are sober of our customers. And those people now have a place to go that they feel is safe and that really promotes non-alcoholic beverage consumption.
For people who are not drinking for a variety of reasons, I wonder how difficult it's been for them all these years to go out with friends and then not order a drink. And maybe it's no issue, maybe it is. But maybe if they're recently sober, it's challenging. And I wonder if the flip is true, too. That is, people who want to have a beer with alcohol in it, I wonder if it's a compromise for them when they go to your place. Just talk about those two schools, if you will.
Yeah, I think for people that have never really been able to go out and have a non-alcoholic beverage,
yeah.
I think now is different in the terms of just the mindset and the approach of how people respond to that more than anything. And what I mean by that is, you know, 5-10 years ago, you're out at a bar and you'd ask for a non-alcoholic beer. They look at you like you're a bit crazy and there was like one option. Now it's been this kind of discovery moment where you have these cool beers in your hand that look like craft beer. You can't really tell the difference from the can itself. And it's something where that strikes a conversation with people. And what many folks have told me, definitely my peers, is that it leads other people to want to abstain or reduce alcohol consumption as well.
I wonder if people, instead of having a third beer or a second beer, you know, do a mix and match.
You know, what's really interesting is that I thought a lot of people would do that. And I actually asked the question on our website. So one of the powers of selling non-alcoholic beers, I could sell it online. So we sell it on our website. We sell it on Amazon. And this year alone, we're going to sell 40,000 customers. That's 40000, which is pretty amazing. And we get a lot of data and we ask a lot of questions. And one of the questions I did ask is, when do you consume non-alcoholic beer? And the answer primarily is on specific days of the week. And that makes sense. When I have to take myself back to the days when I have an alcoholic beverage, it really, once I have one or two, I'm probably thinking a little less rationally than I was when I started. So it does make sense that our consumers report that. Certainly there's people that switch, but I think it's a little harder. Once you get a few drinks in you, it's hard to make those decisions.
Joe Chur is the president and founder of GoBrewing.com. What can I do for you today, Joe? Should we try the pumpkin-flavored beer? Is that the deal now?
I think for us, if you see us at any retailer, pick up our product, give it a try. If you know anyone that wants to just take a break from alcohol or maybe drink a little bit less, spread the word of Go Brewing. You know, we are locally owned and operated. We are one of the only non-alcoholic beer manufacturers in the country that actually produce our own stuff. So we don't contract out.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything is handcrafted right here in Naperville.
So if you are going sober for October, and it's a thing, sober October, and October is obviously a big drinking month, there is Go Brewing for you, GoBrewing.com. How awesome is it that you can also get it online? I hadn't thought about that distinction, but I can see how that would be good for you, Joe. Congratulations. Stay in touch and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me.